This week on RSPB Update, the Woodcutter's Grove is here, and it comes close to reworking woodcutting and construction. Hatchets, trees, and the forts all get buffs this week. We have XP rates and more. We also discuss soul dies and what's going on with the Grand Exchange. This is RSPB Update, episode 940, recorded Thursday, June 22nd, 2023. New Foundations of Skilling. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. The Woodcutter's Grove is upon us, changing the way we do woodcutting and construction, interestingly enough, this week in RuneScape. Tanis, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us today to talk about Woodcutter's Grove and the woodcutting update and everything construction related with it is Parnassius, everyone's second favorite Australian co-host, who we're still trying to figure out who the first is, though I think somebody thought the first was you, Tanis.
I've heard that.
Yes, I'm competing against my fellow Aussie, Tanis.
G'day.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's just go with that. Good day, folks. Good day. But of course, we're going to go through the Woodcutter's Grove. We're going to talk about the soul die, which is an interesting discussion in itself, because it was, you know, once with Aurora die, second was soul die, and, you know, as the saying goes, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. I forget how the quote goes. Anyways, you get the idea. I think that's fine that I forget, because wasn't that HW or something?
Yeah. If you fool me twice, then you can't fool me again.
Yeah, that's it.
That's not how that goes, sir.
That's right. Oh, of course it's me to mess up a quote just like one of your presidents did. But in any case, of course... we're going to be going through Woodcutter's Grove, Soul Die, and then a bit of a recap on some of the Grand Exchange stuff from last week, because we got some information after the fact that we want to talk about that changes the discussion on that. But if you're joining us for the first time, you can find full show notes at update.show. We're also in-game at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. We do have a community Discord as well at rsbnb.com/discord. I am Shane12088 in-game. Tanis can be found at Tanis79, and Parnassius is just Parnassius. So, let's dive in. Woodcutter's Grove. Arrived on Monday. Very beautiful environments, as we were thinking it was going to be. Did you guys just go dive in and go straight there? How did you guys approach this? Build it up to Tier 3?
Yep, I just went straight to Tier 3. I prepared a whole bunch of frames. Wasn't actually expecting 48 for the top tier ones. So I only had like 20 made, so had to whip out another 28 of the mahogany frames there. But just straight into it, got it built to Tier 3, and then went into my wood cutting.
All right, Tanis, how was your first impressions of it? What? What's up?
What is it, Sirion? Always phrasing. Phrasing, Shane.
I don't even know what I said.
I know you don't. That's what makes it so quaint. Anyway, I went straight to the third tier 3-2, which was the first indication that this XP was going to be decent, and I was like super excited by the time I had even finished building the tier 3 grove. I was like, oh, this is going to be.
Yeah, we got something big here.
Yeah, and we knew like it was right around what she had mentioned earlier. Like that, I was getting like right around, well, that's a topic you can explain to everybody why the metric doesn't work right. But yeah. When I looked at that, it, you know, it said 330 for just that grove. I was like, oh damn.
You know, yeah, you got to kind of read a bit into that based on how the dollops of XP go and whatnot. And, you know, I think the devil is in the details for this. Just it's one update that provides so much for woodcutting, something that a skill that, you know, has quite honestly been neglected for too long. It was plagued by technical debt, or spaghetti code, as people like to call it. And, you know, I know the JMod said that part of this update behind the scenes that we don't see is actually untangling that spaghetti code and making it so that woodcutting can receive additions in the future, which is, you know, very important, because it wasn't too long ago that we were told that, you know, woodcutting is too complicated to add new hatchets to. But here we are. Of course, we now have the M-Kando hatchet. More on that in a minute. I want to go to the rewards first, specifically the wood box and the wood spirits, just to name a couple things. And, you know, you would think that the wood box works exactly the same way that the ore box does for mining and smithing, and you would be correct in that, and that you need to make it with your fletching skill based on the amount of logs that you have. And as with the ore box, I really enjoyed the process of doing that. And I feel like the wood box is going to be the thing that's going to really change the way we interact with woodcutting on a day-to-day basis going forward, especially when you're woodcutting outside the grove, in addition to all the technical and XP changes behind the scenes. Any interaction quibbles or questions about the wood box while we're here on that, now that we've had a chance to get our hands on it?
My only issue with it is this update has brought in so many more items to take up bank space. What I loved about when I read the wood box is you could store those wood spirits in it, and I do love wood spirit. I mean, I love mining spirits, all the nests, but you can put those wood spirits into the wood box. I thought, great, that at least saves a bit of, you know, a couple of bank spaces on the ones I use. But as soon as you bank it, they come out. So you still need all those bank spaces.
Yeah.
This update, and especially with Last Wills as well, the new items that are all coming in, there's like 40 or 50 new items that take up bank space.
Yeah, we're now, not going to talk about how my bank tab looks the first tab.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have 1,720 bank spaces. I've unlocked everything. You know, I bought all the bank spaces. I've got the Premier Club one. You know, I've got every bank space available. And I had to go and clean out my bank space, my bank, because, you know, I just filled it completely with all these new items. So it would be good if those boxes could keep those when you bank it, rather than taking them out. But
it would be good if the wood box does something.
But, you know, at the moment, especially anyone who's done the Golden Cape have got that buff of the permanent porter for the 28 days. The box is probably not overly useful just now, but once that's sort of out, it's a great idea to, you know, throw in all your logs as you're cutting. You don't have to sort of keep banking. But again, I mean, you know, that's only if you want the logs, which I'll only pretty much do with elders. Most of the others I just use always adds anyway. So, as I said, it'd be great just to store those stone spirits in it, but
inside the box, even when you bank it.
Exactly.
And you know, to be fair, I think the design behind the scenes for a wood spirit would probably be the same as a stone spirit, in that it would need to be in your inventory to use. But to be clear, the part we're questioning here is that you can put these things, you can have an inventory of wood spirits that you get from opening nests, as in you could store those in your inventory and then put them in the wood box, the nest, and the wood spirits. But when you click bank on your character, it empties that wood box.
Into the bank.
Into
that's
the
right.
bank. And, you know, that might be an interaction that people might not want. And I think the interesting part is that those two are coupled up, and it's not exactly a clear interaction. And I think that's where the confusion comes in, and where the potential change could be made on that is that, you know, hey, don't bank what's in the wood box unless I right-click empty when I got that banking window up. And I think that would fix that issue going forward on
Definitely.
That.
Yep. Would love that.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, it's these are little things, and you know, These are just requests. This isn't a complaint because obviously they've got so many things to think about. You know, we appreciate all these updates. These are just little quality of life things we'd like to see, you know, them address maybe in the future. You know, I don't expect it to be done next week, but, you know, in over when they revisit these things and say, okay, what could we improve? These are the type of things I'd like them to take note of and to see if there's anything that can be done. And it might be that, you know, it can't be done. It might be something in the code that it can't be banked full because of, you know, it's a different item or something. But, you know, it'd be nice to see if we could.
Yeah. And, you know, I must say, we saw on live stream what this thing looked like, right? But it's an entirely different perspective walking through it with your character because we're at the point now where this has become a forest and your character is able to go through it. And it feels like a dense and rugged forest, which is something that, you know, I would think that really hasn't been possible in RS to experience or feel. I think the area that's probably brought us the closest to that in the past has been either the Lost Grove or the peninsula by where the Needle Skips took place. And, you know, both those at the time were two very, you know, beautiful areas that jumped off the scene. Whereas with this one, this is in that same sort of league in that it's just so dense that you're actually able to bring yourself into it. So the environment team, as we always say, whenever the environment team seemingly comes onto the scene, as they have been doing recently, they just blow everything away with this. So well done. Well done on that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. One weird thing that I found, they've got every tree down there, including an elder tree, except the magic tree.
Yeah.
You gotta use the farming patch for that one. That's what I did. Yeah.
I'm wondering what the reason behind that is. Like, is it some kind of lore reason, or is it because, you know, we have Elder there and there's just so many other magic trees in-game that you can go to? Yeah. Like, you have, like, going west to east, you have the ones in the Elven Lands, you have the ones in Prif, you have the ones at the Sorcerer's Tower.
I don't use anything other than the Prif ones anyway, because you just sort of duck backward and forward between. That's the other thing that the other big improvement that they've done here is the respawn rate of those magics in Prifthinus. I haven't tested anywhere else, but like they're back in 3 seconds.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good point to go on this, and we'll get to XP rates in a minute, but hatchets and trees have been completely rebalanced with this to vastly improve cut chance and improve XP on this. And, you know, we saw this in the news post last week. And, you know, looking at, you know, magic significantly increased, you significantly increased. XP goes from 250 to 365 on magic and 175 to 187 on you. And, you know, you look at these on paper here, all of these increases don't really seem as though they're going to have such a huge impact, but oh my god, lo and behold, you start interacting with this content, it completely changes the way woodcutting feels.
Yeah, it's much more modern. Without redoing the identity of the skill, you know what I mean? Like,
And, you know, I feel like we walked into a trap, kind of, and I have to say perhaps Mod Jack was right all along on this, in that the mining and smithing rework felt so successful that we thought that every major skill rework had to be a, you know, from the ground up kind of change the flow of it, like it did for mining and it did for smithing, but we also need to realize how horrendous those two skills were, that with changes around the edges like we have here and now, we're kind of able to accomplish that same feeling. But we'll get more into that in the conclusion on it, unless you have anything to add rebalance-wise, Parnassus.
No, I was just going to say, it really does feel like a rework skill that didn't really get reworked. You know, it's the rebalancing has just been excellent.
The dev team behind this too. Like, obviously, it's not as big as mining and smithing was. I think it was Mod Shogun and Mod Hunter plus the environment people on this. Really, so
the environment. I do have to mention something on that.
Yeah, is it? I'm going to see if it's where I think you're going. But go ahead.
It kind of wrecked me.
Oh,
it's It's beautiful, but there's so much coverage that I have a hard time getting to.
Do you have the option on so that when you're running through, you can see through the trees?
Only if I'm like zoomed in. Like,
okay.
I don't know. I'll have to find that toggle.
Yeah, and you know, another kind of disconcerting thing is that, you know, we have some trees here that are orange. And typically the orange trees in RS have been maple trees. So I walked in here and I thought these orange trees were maple.
I did the same thing.
They're just regular.
But still, yeah, it just looks beautiful. Yeah.
Well, it looked to me like there were regular trees that were like, I thought they were magic. They were like, they look like blue puffs or something. I'm like, is that a magic tree?
That's either your screen or the colorblindness speaking.
Yeah, no, that's me. And it's having crappy eyes, but and it's hard to click on the specific tree that you're trying to click on, like on mobile, I found as well.
Yeah, and that, like you said, that added a bunch of clutter and whatnot, so that makes sense. Okay, XP rates. Let's go in on XP rates right now, because this is something we needed to talk about, and we didn't feel comfortable talking about these last week on these, because we didn't have them at the time. So starting off on these, thank you, Parnassius, for going through these. We were wondering how big this was going to be, and in general, I think what it comes down to is that it feels better to cut these trees, but the XP is only a little bit higher, right? It's not, you know, a huge substantial change.
Other than elders.
Other than
and
elders
magics.
And magics. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you know, I think that's fine, and I think we have a more logical progression right now in that we have a step up going from Acadia to Ivy to Magic to Elder and then to Crystal. At the very high end. And this was a setup that you did, and, you know, correct any details if they're wrong on this. 99 woodcutting, Imkando hatchet with Hone 6 and Fortune 3, the Nature Sentinel's outfit, the Ring of Whispers, Perfect Plus potion, Lumberjack aura. We're looking at
the Imkando, also, just the Imkando axe obviously was just a level 1 because I'd only just gotten it, not a level 20 where you get that extra proc. So the feel between Imkando and my Crystal Hatchet, which was level 20, wasn't a great deal of difference, but when you sort of take that into account as well, obviously when it hits level 20, the Imkando will be a much better hatchet.
Yeah, so for all intents and purposes, we could. I think you said the numbers were, you know, within probably 3 or 4% of the Crystal Hatchet and the Imkando at level 1. So just keep that in mind, that you're effectively here operating with a level 1 Imkando. You're going to have better luck if you have a level 20, or if you have a level 20 Crystal, you're going to be pretty close to this. And what you end up with at the end of the day is you have, assuming you've been using the fire torch, we're looking at about 159k for Acadia, 184 for Ivy, which is pretty much tied with magic because magic comes in at 183. Then Golden Bamboo is 206. And previously, Golden Bamboo was the star, but now the star goes to Elder and Crystal, specifically Elder at 241 and Crystal at 263. So there's your choice. Do I want to make some money along the way with Elder Logs? Which, you know, that's going to be debatable if they're still going to be worth as much as they are, because there's been so many of them coming in now that they cut faster. Or do you just want to go for the Crystal Trees? And when I went for 120 woodcutting, that was just one of the weirdest things out there, is that Golden Bamboo was better XP per hour than Crystals were.
Mm.
And it's the nice only to thing see with that Golden kind of Bamboo. Rectified.
Yeah, and you sort of have to keep jumping islands and all that type of thing. So that is, I think they've done a good balance on that.
And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's a logical progression. That means that if you're at a certain level, Ben, it makes sense to cut that tree, and you don't need to be questioning, you know, hey, I unlock crystals. Why should I, you know, why should I have to move away from that if that's one of the highest trees out there? So that I'm pleased about, because it wouldn't make sense otherwise. Then, go ahead.
I just want to say, I mean, I think the rebalance of the elders is, it's really nice, because before it was a hard choice between doing the bamboo, but you know, part of you wants to do elders because it feeds into so many other things, right?
Yeah.
Like, because if you're using the fire torch, you're getting those splintering arrowheads. Well, I'm thinking, man, that's kind of free fletching, you know, if I ever wanted to. But I need elder shaft, right? But you need nest. Elder's best fire making, you know, like bonfire XP. Like, it can feed into so many things, but it was such a hard choice because
it was so 80k an hour.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what I love. It used to be 80k an hour elder, and it's 240k basically. So, you know, it's gone up four times. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So. And then,
and I can fix the prices, Shane.
Okay.
Yep, I'll agree with this one straight away because I know where you're going.
It's time to remove them off of the drop tables.
Specifically magics. Elders were never on, but specifically magics.
Yeah. I was at Elder God Wars 2 last week for a little bit, and yeah, walked away after an hour with over 1,100 magic logs.
Yeah. And you saw everyone was freaking out with the wood spirits, like, oh no, they're going to. It's like,
yes, do it.
Yeah, do it.
But then
with that, they don't even need to put wood spirits on the drop tables because wood spirits already have a way of coming into game through the skilling component, and it doesn't need to feel like a pity drop.
Right, which is even better. But I mean, I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, but keep in mind, you also then paint the picture that the whole reason you had things like wood on there, and then previously ores, was that you had to rebalance and balance out. You know, when you weren't getting the golden drops, so to speak, the drops that net lots of money for PVM, and it was about keeping that consistent. That's why those were there. But I want to get to the non-fire torch numbers, because you did a set of that as well. Specifically, somebody who is high 90s woodcutting has the outfit. What can you expect from that? We have the other numbers on that, and that's Acadia 131, Ivy 167, Magic 154, so a little bit of discrepancy there. Golden Bamboo 180, Elders 195, and Crystals 235,000 XP an hour. So, still decent XP even without the Fire Torch, but it shows just how impactful that Fire Torch is for these numbers.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was shocked at just how much it does help.
And, you know, the interesting part about this is that this was a skilling offhand from the first skilling boss that we had in game, and when I was going for 120 woodcutting, I felt as though that it made elders back then something that was viable to cut. And with this, it's even more so when you realize that, oh, holy crap, if I want to be going to cut elder logs there, I'm looking at, you know, an additional 45k XP an hour. That's a definite pickup.
Mm. So, plus those splintering arrowheads.
Yeah.
After your fletching. It shocked me at how much better it was with the fire torch. The only downside there is it's not augmentable yet, but I do hope they'll fix that in the future too.
Yeah. And then,
I mean, they can make offhand weapons augmentable. Surely they can make offhand skilling augmentable.
And you know, just paints a picture of why we need to. You know, a comprehensive scaling offense strategy for that. But as they say, that's a topic for another show.
For another day.
Yeah. So woodcutting feels better. Woodcutting feels better with this. Woodcutting feels like it's got the nice buffs around the edges that it needs. But construction. And this was something that left us kind of meh when the fort first came out in February. I remember we were on that episode with Zerdones, and we were like, what is with these XP rates? These XP rates are not competitive at all unless you're like under, you know, level 40 construction, then, you know, go make planks or go make stone blocks or something, right? But yeah. It turns out that the fort wasn't necessarily designed as a construction training method. They added XP on after the fact to just make it feel as though that, hey, yeah, you can rebuild these buildings. But then people said, no, we want an actual construction training method with this. And we have that this week. I'm just going to be 100% honest here. The XP rates are eye-watering. Now, we could start off with, you know, the tier 1 workshop at level 1. This the XP on this stayed the same. 55k XP an hour. Available to build at level 1 needs planks. This is what it was before, so I don't feel like we need to talk too much about this one. But then we start getting into where things change, and we look at the tier 2 workshop at level 35, requiring 20 teak frames. And what we're looking at for this, assuming you're going for a perfect build and you've built your tier 3 workshop, you're looking at 189.5 k XP an hour, when previously this was about 170-ish or so. So it jumps up. It jumps up a bit. And, you know, that's okay. That's a decent amount of XP, I think. At level 35. Yeah, that's fine, right? And
that's brilliant.
And when you look at what else, the fact that, you know, hey, this is also using teak frames, and it's going to need on the order of 240 teak frames per, yeah, maybe we might do that. But then we go to level 75 in the tier 3 workshop. 521 KXP an hour. Previously, this was 255.
So more than double. Or just on double.
Yeah.
And
this one uses U-frames.
There's a big caveat, though, to these are the optimal builds. I've yet to get an optimal build.
Right. But you can math that out after the fact. And if you're not going for the perfect build on this, it's still 417 AFK.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it's a 20% boost for your perfect build. Every 5% that you don't have on that perfect build ticker brings it down by 1% XP. So it's 20% overall buff if you go for the 100% perfect build.
Yeah, I think that's something that we could still get a little bit of improvement on. I think it should go up when you're on it.
But this is level 75. Oh, you mean how the perfect build mechanic works?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And,
like, it should only be going down when you're off of it.
Right. And then go back up when you're on it. Yeah. I see. Not have it so that it can't recover. 576 U planks for this, which can now be made in your plank maker. And then we get to level 99, which was the other one I tested. I tested, because these were the ones I tested back in February. Back then, this was also 250,000 XP build. Now, at level 99, using 80 Elder Frames, which comes out to 960 Elder Planks, we're looking at just over 1 million XP per hour, perfect build, specifically 1,041,000 XP per hour. And if you wanted to AFK this, 832K XP an hour.
Okay.
And that's which
18K
is,
per plank?
I don't know what it's at now, but it's probably going to go down.
They're down. They're below 15K now.
Okay.
Because I had about 30,000 elders in my bank already, which I chucked in at 15K, and they haven't sold. So.
Okay. And for comparison's sake, the Flotsam Prawn Brokers go between 650 and 900,000 XP an hour, depending on how efficient you are. So that's mahogany planks. So if you wanted to use elders and just get, you know, AFK XP construction, yeah, 832,000 XP an hour with this.
Mm-hmm. And it costs, I mean, and it's pricey. I love it.
Right, it's that choice about, you know, do I go with the tried and true click intensive mahogany route, or do I go, you know, with the more expensive AFK route and get the same XP rates? But with that, if I lean in further, I get that 20% boost.
But it's a good gold sink too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds, you know what this reminds me of, Shane, is there's a precedent for this with prayer and cleansing crystals.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, except you're giving the money to another player. You're not giving it to an NPC.
Yeah, we are. You're
with the, you know, with the auto machines and all that. But hey, that's fine.
Liquidity, Shane. It keeps liquidity in the system. Yeah,
exactly. There you go. There you go. So does anybody have 200 mil construction in their futures now with this?
Oh, maybe.
I actually do. I will not use the elders. I'll just stick to my mahoganies. But, I mean, I'm mainly doing it through proteins anyway. But,
and see, that's the thing. The proteins with that are able to be converted to any of these plank types. I think if you're not converting them to elder, you're making a mistake. You could convert them to something else, but it just really shows how you can amp that process up. And, you know, in closing, I think I'll just mention that the Iron Men also have an option now with this, that they can add in the amount of XP that they get from making the planks and processing the planks and then converting those process planks into frames. And then you add on to this, and you start to see this woodcutting and, dare I say, construction ecosystem taking place. And we always thought that the ecosystem would be woodcutting fletching, but no, it's turning out to be woodcutting construction here with this.
Yeah. Which, I mean, but that makes more sense. And what I like about this is the surface construction that we have been...
That we'd always wanted.
We always wanted, and it actually worked. And whereas there was in 2005 or whenever the PLH was three.
That's when we first started carpentry.
Well, I'm just, but the PLH was later than that, right?
Yeah, 2006 was the PLH.
Yeah, but originally it had usable things in it, where it is this, once again, with four and three, you have your construction method, but you're also building, you know,
it's turning into a skilling hub.
Yeah, but it's kind of like yours, right? It's kind of like your POH in a way. Yep. But you know it's
on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're not isolated into your own little house where you don't see anyone.
Yeah, I couldn't picture this when they had talked. I mean, they've been talking about it for years of wanting something like this, and I never could picture it. And now that we have it, it makes sense. I like the ecosystem, and this is what I'm talking about when it comes to like revitalizing skills. If you can revitalize the purpose and just give it a need, give it a reason for people to do it, it can change everything. Like just that in of itself can change everything.
Yeah. And you know, I think there's a whole learning experience on this too when it comes to how skilling updates can be made. And I want to talk about that a bit. But before we do that, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters for this week. I want to thank Alfie S, Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvids L, Big Huge Rat, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Keski, Ling01, Maniac RS, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Nick G, Pernasius, Ricky A, RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirt Pants, Stabive, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Coat, Tim, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you everybody for your support. It truly means the world to us. And you can check out more about our Patreon offerings at patreon.com/RSBNB. And there, starting for as little as a dollar a month, we have three tiers available, including the $1 a month tier, which provides an incredible value for anybody who signs up. You get access to a back catalog of almost 60 monthly bits at this point in time. Those are monthly bonus shows where we talk about a single topic in great detail. Just last month, we had our meta monthly bit looking back at 5 years of these episodes, our biggest takeaways, our favorite episodes, and so much more. You guys really enjoyed that one. So thank you for the good feedback on that. But we also have other ones out there as well, like our tier lists, like our discussion on Legacy Combat, holiday events, and so many other ones that have popped up from time to time. Revitalizing drop tables, that's another interesting one. Where does RuneScape 3 grow its player base? Lots of hard-hitting questions like that, all available for as little as $1 a month. And if you want to vote in the next monthly bit, as of recording, you have 4 days left to do that. And presently, I'm looking at a tie here for our next monthly bit between Archaeology Minisites and the Minigame Tier List. And not far behind it is University of RuneScape Basic Economics. So, yeah, we could be doing another tier list, or we could be talking about archaeology. So it's up to the Patreon supporters to decide where we go for that. But you can find all that and more at patreon.com/rsbnb, including a VIP tier, where you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord, which includes chat channel access and a mention at the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, if you want to give the ultimate gift, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. So big, big, huge thank you goes out to all of our supporters. It truly means the world to us. Thanks so much, everyone. Okay. Okay. So I think it's safe to say that we learned something with the skilling update. And that's that when it comes to these sorts of updates, you know, when they called it new foundations, it was kind of saying that, you know, it's new foundations in the sense that it's a fort. But we're also seeing a set of new foundations starting to work its way into the game when it comes to skilling updates. And if you look at what we got this week, it's very clear on the surface that the Woodcutter's Grove with Fort 4 and 3 this week, I think, has done three things on the skilling side for construction and woodcutting. The first, of course, is that it provides this new construction training method this week that's now competitive with the POH. It wasn't before, but we can definitely say that it's competitive with the POH now, and it jumps ahead of the POH when it comes to a lean forward playstyle. And of course, lingering questions about cost and whatnot will be answered in the short order. But like you said, Tanis, it brings forward that idea of surface world construction, playing socially with everybody else that had been talked about when the construction skill was named Carpentry way back when it was a dream of the RuneScape team back in the day, but they didn't have the engine to support it. And lo and behold, we see that realized now in the way construction has landed with this. And it really, I think, raises the question. I think it puts the next big question out there is, what happens to the POH at this point?
I've wondered about that. But what we've, you know, what we, I can't remember if we were mentioning this in pre-show, but reworking the code, you know, from this, it really is building up from ground up, but it's not the mining and smithing ground up.
No.
Kind of, right? No. And so you have that, everything still works the same. What you do, you have this major rebalancing and you have a purpose to do it.
Right. Like you said, it's more predictable. Each level sees an increase in XP and you have a purpose to be doing each thing when you're woodcutting, and then in theory you could Iron Man that into construction and have this neat little ecosystem like Farming Herblore has.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I never realized just how much that's where RuneScape can shine. You know, I guess it makes sense because it is the thing that initially interested me about RuneScape was how the skills kind of interacted with each other.
Okay.
And over 20 years now, we're really starting to see Jagex is really kind of getting it, that interaction between skills and Maul updates, or what, so, you know, what aren't like whole skill reworks can have the impact of a whole skill rework.
Yeah.
And it's becoming sort of a bit of a skilling hub, this fort. You've got your cooking there, you've got your construction, your wood cutting. You know, it's starting to bring together an actual little skilling hub with not every skill, obviously, but sort of a good
There's
place
a cave
to train.
There that's looking like you're going to be able to enter it at some point. Yeah.
I was looking at that and. We do have one little farming patch there. Maybe, you know, maybe we'll get something else in the future as well.
Fairy ring on the quest side. So
the fairy ring, yes. I saw that there and unlocked that.
And we mention all these things, and what that also goes back to is quality of life. Specifically, the fact that we now have the Mkando hatchet. We have the wood box. We have wood spirits. And a lot of this stuff was seen as quality of life. And what's the number one thing we heard in that community hint list when people were put out, you know, hey, we need updates and, you know, we want something like a ninja dojo kind of thing, except widespread, work on quality of life. And that is another thing this update does, which is, you know, we know they're on record as saying that's part of the blueprint for these skill updates. But you look at woodcutting as well right now, and you mentioned the mining and smithing rework. The only real thing it's missing from that style of rework right now is the overloader masterwork style of self-craftable item and non-competitive skill nodes. If woodcutting were to receive those, it would be on par with the mining and smithing rework this week. 100%, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And there are things that they can add down the track, so...
Yeah, and I agree with that. And you know, I was just thinking about this during the show. The masterwork or overload item, said item, you know, Mkando doesn't have to be the end of the hatchet, right? I mean, now that they have a way to do another hatchet, you could do it like, you know, I mean, because
I want it to be a craftable bow.
Craftable bow.
Yeah, for range.
But that would be more fletching interaction than cutting.
I know, but we always say we weren't leaning into the construction side for that, but we can also lean into fletching as well, I think. So I'm on the craftable bow.
I guess so.
And then you could, you know, maybe get some kind of fibers from the trees that you cut along the way, and there's your crafting lean too. And then you combine those together, and then, whoa, we got the overload masterwork item. So I want to see that. And we also see with this that they can do now mid-size, mid-tier skill updates that provide that same feeling of a rework, like mining and smithing did, without needing to, you know, throw the kitchen sink at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's giving it a purpose, and it's doing the quality of life things.
Yeah.
That's what really makes this feel like a complete update, like such an impactful update.
Yeah. And, you know, woodcutting felt like it was just so boring before, and that it was one of the skills that was really stuck in 2005, but not the case anymore with this. It also sets the future tone for expansions, I think, not necessarily with woodcutting, but other skills, in that everything that we've got since Fort 4 and 3 arrived is what you would find in the expansion of another game.
Yeah.
And it's just released out over a series of months, right?
Yep. I couldn't help but think to myself, I'm like, see, this is why I can't have nice things. Like, I could have...
But at the same time...
content months ago, but I can't, because...
How would we have covered that on the show at the time, right? We would have been,
It's not good for the show.
Chickens
but
with our head cut off.
For a player, it might be.
But it's done perfectly because it gives you bite-sized pieces to work through each month, rather than sitting there and dumping on it all at once, and then everyone's, you know, doing 15 hours a day trying to max it out and putting themselves in hospital because they want to be the first. You're just breaking it up, you know, month by month. And I think this is the way they should have done Menafoss. You know, just that bit by bit by bit. And yeah, it's expansion's 2.0 for RuneScape and done really well.
Yeah.
I mean, as I said, it's done a great job for what it's supposed to be doing, and they hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, and like I said, this charts a path forward for this, and the question is, can we keep to this same strategy and keep iterating on it? Because that's been one of the biggest downfalls with the changing leadership inside JAX, is that strategies change so often that what we had before, you know, elements of it get brought forward, like I feel like Mod Warden's Polish did with everything we see now. The question is, when the RS3 executive producer inevitably changes, can what we've picked up here be carried through forward to ask the next big set of questions, which, if we're going to tee the segment off in that way, I think the next biggest questions that I don't want us to answer today, but the next biggest questions are what happens with the POH? What happens to the Max Guild? And also what happens to our other skills like crafting and whatnot? Because those are the ones that are still truly left out in the cold there.
I want my POH to turn into a big menagerie where I can put every pet and cat creature, every type in there, and just have them all in my house.
Yeah. and I mean, Max is just a quick G teleport, if we're being honest.
Pretty much, so. Yeah. That's all it's used for these days, really.
Yeah. So there's lots of questions that we can answer with this, but I feel like we're on a good foot now. And, you know, if necromancy follows this, we might have something really interesting here. And I'm keen to leave it there on that. Do you guys have anything to add?
No, I just want to give kudos to the team who did it. You've done a spectacular job. I don't think you really set a foot wrong on this one. I mean, there's a few little extra things that we could have, but there's nothing that breaks the game, that hurts the game, that you think, oh Jesus, you know, this is stuffed up. Everything is that's been done is a positive.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I think now we definitely can say that we have a blueprint for not only how a new skill should be done, but a medium skill rework.
Mm. Yep. Yep. I agree.
Yep.
All right. And, you know, with this, there are some patch notes to look at for this week, and we're going to do that let's do the patch notes right now. I was going to say let's do the last wheels first, but let's do the patch notes right now since we're on a roll coming out of this update. Just little things this week. Grand Exchange quantity buttons no longer cap at 1,000. Your client would crash if you exceeded the max amount of money for a Grand Exchange offer. So somebody tried to put in that, you know, 2+ quintillion offer and crash the client on an item.
I deserved it for doing it.
Yeah. Fixed an issue that would cause coins to disappear when emptying your pouch into a full bank. Yeah.
Ouch.
Ouch. Restricted items for specific areas are now correctly removed from the player's inventory when teleporting. God books can't be charged with 24 hours use of time by only using one page. We kind of talked about that one last week. Players teleporting into the wilderness will now get a pop-up warning about the dangers of the wilderness if they're opted into PvP.
Oh, that was this is the one I loved. Being able to just click my wilderness sword to farm patch without having to go through all the warnings, because obviously I have PvP turned off, you don't get that warning anymore. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So good for teleporting out of there on that. And then finally, music will be correctly muted when you have the global mute option and or the music options toggled on when you log back in. All right. Last wills and parcels from the dead. Quite the departure from woodcutting and construction here, I must say. So this is an update that is inherently linked to microtransactions, because you do get the last wills from Treasure Hunter, and it operates very similarly to the Christmas wrapping paper, except, you know, you're not getting XP and Christmas food from this one. You're getting things like fan mail, oddments, bones, ashes, maybe some pure essence along the way, skill enhancers like woodcutting perk enhancers, or the woodcutting item XP enhancers. And these are items that were first added back from things like the Traveling Artisans event way back when in the year of 2020. Transmog rings and such as well. The bones are interesting given that necromancy's on the way. Some cosmetic tokens, but the thing that, you know, everybody is talking about, of course, is the soul dying. We don't know exactly what the rate for this is, but the wiki estimates that getting a gold package of soulful forgotten belongings is 75 out of 1 million, which translates to a 0.075% chance of getting that. And if you do manage to get one of those, you will receive this dye that is a wonderful green color, I must say. I really do love the way this dye looks. I don't know exactly what I would use this on if I got one, but this is actually one of the dyes that I would use, just because, you know, I'm a huge green fan.
You would have to have it on a scythe, so when you do your farming runs.
Oh God! Oh, that would be the most expensive farming scythe out there. Yeah, and like I said, this is one of the ones I would go for, and there's also the outfit token that comes along with this, and I feel like we have to address the elephant in the room with this here, because we had the Aurora die at Christmas, which was another die that everybody went crazy for, but the issue is that prior to that, folks were told that when it came to adding new dyes for things like the Master Clue Table and so on and so forth, it was something that they really didn't want to do, because for every dyed item, they had to effectively create new copies of that piece of equipment. And I'm just scrolling through the list here on the wiki of everything that can be dyed, and you can see what a big task that is. And that was the rationale given for why there was no dyes being added to the clue scroll system. And that, at this point, has rubbed some cluers the wrong way, because right now, dyes are being, you know, let's be honest, dyes are being used as a monetization event. There's no if, ands, or but about that. We had it with the Aurora dye. We now have it with the Soul dye. They're being used, of course, to sell treasure hunter keys to buy these last wills. And the question I think comes up with this, is there ever going to be a chance at this point to have more dyes added to not treasure hunter, of course, something they could easily do with this, but is there an opportunity to have more dyes added to the clue scroll system? And I think the important thing to realize with this discussion is that you can be upset about this in one of two ways. The first one is that the dyes are not being added to clue scrolls, and you're an avid clue scroll fan, and you feel that all the dyes should just be available through clue scrolls. And I think that's fine to be upset about that. But on the other hand, I think there's the wider discussion going on about what's the ultimate clarification going to be on this. Why was the decision made that all of a sudden more dyes can now be added when, you know, the clue community in general was told that we really can't add many more of these? And I think that's where the issues of discussion come in. And, you know, with Jagex's recent transparency push, I think them answering both those questions would be a good way to go. And, you know, maybe provide in some way, we were talking about ways that they could make things like the Soul and Aurora dyes available, whether it's, you know, adding them as ultra rare drops to the Master Clue Scrolls, or adding them maybe to the Oddment store for some exorbitant price amount would be ways to kind of move outside of this real-world trading conundrum that people feel they've been put in this week with this. And it's worth noting that from the regulatory angle, they don't actually need to disclose the drop rates of these, because they're not coming from Treasure Hunter. They're coming from the Last Wills event. Where do you guys come in on this?
You can go first, Dennis.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, like that's an interesting little workaround with with that. But I think a couple of things. Maybe the original sin here was ever making die as part of like a clue reward.
Yeah. Because maybe, in other games, they're part of the microtransaction scheme.
Right. And so maybe what we need for cluers, what makes more sense is we could always have, it would be probably more cost effective for Jagex to create a new rare item that is put on the clue table versus these dies, because these dies are going to take longer. It take more time to do because of all the items.
Like, so let's be honest,
more expensive.
Putting them in the microtransaction camp means to me that they make enough money to justify creating these copies of these items, unless they've come up with another way of doing it that they haven't told us yet.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, it just seems like if something actually does cost more, then it...
Like, I think I see where you're going. Like, put the dies and whatnot in the microtransaction stuff, like this one in the Aurora die, and just go crazy with that. And then I think the other path, like you said, is just add vanity rare items, like we used to have our Black Cav and all those other fun things like that in the treasure trails.
Yeah, like the backstab cave.
Yeah.
They could make a lot of cool stuff. But I just think it makes more sense to make one item, right, than have to make copies of bunches of items. That cost more.
Yeah, and I once again, I would think that then comes down to how the items are actually structured in that. So, Parnassius?
Yeah, I mean, I love my clues, and I mean, getting a die is exciting, but I have no issue with this because it is a purely cosmetic item, and yeah, it'd be nice to be on the clues, and perhaps, you know, they bring a caveat out that, hey, we're going to have these on our microtransactions for 3 years, and then we can throw them onto clues.
Yeah.
But the fact that the money that it costs to create those, as you said, that list of died items is huge. And for an item that is just there to throw on a clue, which is a nice little reward, but makes nothing for Jagex themselves, doesn't really make a lot of sense,
right? Yet,
on a business side of things,
and I think so, that's a part of the discussion that's not happening. Like I went through this, and there was a list on Reddit of potential changes that could be made for this, and they were looking for feedback specifically on the visuals of it, and it was a 50-50 shot about whether or not it was going to be about the acquisition method, and it was something that Mod Doom seemed interested to talk about. So it's definitely an avenue going forward, I think, that they can latch on to.
Of course, yeah. And I mean, as I said, you know, you can bring these things in, and then 3 or 4 years' time, chuck them onto Treasure Hunter, and it's great because it's already
treasure
there.
Treasure Trails, Clue Scrolls,
Treasure Trails. It's there. It's already done. So, hey, we've used it for our promotion. Now it's time to throw it onto that. Yo, people have made their money and had that chance from that. Now let's chuck
it
on.
Or here's a different idea. Or here's a different idea. They didn't go this path before because they didn't want to, but have a rotating section of rare items, rare cosmetic items that you get from Master Clue Scrolls that rotate every quarter.
Yeah, you could, but I like it the way it is. And, as I said, things like Orlando's hat and all that type of stuff, an item that is an item on its own that's quick and easy to develop, something super rare that you can throw on there that looks good or is really, you know, like the old Third Age, which is useful for components and things like that. Those type of things, yeah, by all means. But... I mean, yeah, I am a clue. You know, I love my clue scrolls, and I'd love to see something like this on clues, but I also understand that they are running a business. Monetization is a big thing. They've got to justify the time and effort put into it, and if it's not actually making them money, why are they going to put all that effort into it? So chucking it onto something like this, even if they bought it out, you know, we're going to do this every year, for the next 3 years. We do this one, we do the Aurora run when that, that comes out at Christmas time again. We'll do that for Christmas rewards for the next 3 years, whatever. And then, as I said, chuck them on for a million oddments, or, then add them to clue scrolls and things like that, because you'll have the next item that you're going to run for the next 3 years as your money maker. I understand players saying, I pay for the game and I expect everything, but the thing is...
And the other thing... Go ahead. Sorry. Finish your thought.
No, that's the thing. I mean, I come from a business background, so I understand that you have to justify these to your shareholders.
Right, and that's the and that's the thing, is that having that experience puts it in a different light for it. And I think the logical question is, what's next, right? We've given tons of horrible ideas before about what they could do next for monetization and such, but that's just the beast we live in with monetization of games in this day and age, is that everything has to be monetized to some degree, like you were saying, Tanis. This gives you a shot at it because you don't do clues because you find them so cumbersome.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I mean, at least I would get my little chance with my daily spins, right? Because that's the only way. The only way I'm gonna die.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing lots of wood cutting and whatnot, you just got those last wheels stacking up in your currency pouch, and you're gonna have to do a grand opening at some point. So,
I've handed in 45,000 so far, and I've got nothing useful. But it is that excitement thing. Oh, am I going to get it this time? It's like you look at something like the Golden Cape buffs that we've got at the moment, where you have that Infinite Porter or the Golden Security that runs for the 28 days. That's something they could quite easily monetize. You could throw that into Solomon's store.
Don't give them that idea.
Sell those for a couple.
Seriously. Could.
Yeah, you but two bottles for a month, and bang, these are the type. But they've thrown these into the game free for us. That is a monetization idea. So while we complain about them doing some of these things for monetizations, they are still giving us quality of life in-game items for free that you just play the game to earn.
I mean, I think Parnassus, to be fair, this is the first hit. It's free. And they will be coming back with a way to recharge the game.
Yeah. And I have no issue with that. As I said, if they charge me two bonds a month to do it, then fine.
Happily. Yeah. I would happily spend that.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're listening to this out there and you're in the camp of feeling that this is encroaching on clue scrolls, or maybe this is a step too far, let us know, because it's certainly an interesting discussion to have, but as with a good portion of the discussions, I haven't seen many people make a cohesive argument on it.
If it was giving you say the die, you had to buy the die, and it was going to give you an extra 5% chance on a critical hit on a monster, or a chance of an insta-death hit or something like that, then I would have an issue because the selling of it. But because it's purely cosmetic, the way they introduce those type of things, I really don't see an issue on it because of a business side of things and justifying it to why you're spending so much time on an item to your shareholders.
Yeah, that's fair, and that's what it comes down to. At the end of the day, is that there has to be a consistent stream of monetization through microtransactions, and we know Christmas time is one of the big ones with that, and it's not something that Jagex does too terribly often, to the point where other games have consistent lockbox or promo campaigns running, that it's something that's out of the norm for RS, that it draws this kind of reaction to it. But I think if you normalized this kind of thing overall, and it was focused around just cosmetics, and we learned that, we had our first four or five dies, and those were clue scroll dies, but now the die is the monetization thing, I think people would start thinking about it differently. But at the same time, you can also put it into the category that dies were the grand prize, aha, bling bling moment when it comes to Master Clue Scrolls and such, and all tiers of Clue Scrolls too. And
you still have your Ice Dyes and Blood Dyes, which are still worth a fortune.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're removing those and doing that. You know, you still got those items in your Clue Scrolls. So.
I'm just trying to put myself, my head into the space of where somebody might be on this who. Because I feel like that's something we have to do. We're trying to cover
both
sides on this.
But and that's it. And I totally, as I said, I totally understand people sort of feeling that way because it is, I am a clue.
Right, like if clue clues person. Were your thing in game, right, you'd be able to see that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and that's it. And I still see, I would love to have seen them added to clues, but I understand why it wasn't, because you know the work that goes behind it. As I said, if it was a simple, okay, we're throwing in a soul-dyed scythe, and that's it, or a soul-dyed bow. If it was one item and then they're doing it that way, then I would have issues with it. But because it is something that does encompass a large array of product and does take a lot of development, it's not something you can whip up in a day. That's where you've got to sort of understand both sides of the line.
Oh, hey, there's a chance that you can get two dies from the...
I saw that.
Soulful belongings.
Could you imagine being the guy who got the two?
I'm going to do an opening later tonight then.
Yeah, you basically made max cash in one opening.
Nice. All right. Speaking of max cash, we have to go back to our Grand Exchange episode from last week because, unfortunately, a portion of the analysis that we talked about on that needs to be taken with a huge grain of salt and press pause on that. Specifically talking about the amount of money that we thought was being sunk from the Grand Exchange. And it turns out that the Grand Exchange trade volumes that are presented on the website are wrong. And we don't know when they will start working correctly. Now, there was a post by Mod Sokoto on Discord who said that, I realized that on the back end of the GE, the number we see is the number of trades it has waiting to use when recalculating the price. But crucially, if when a recalculation happens, an item doesn't meet the criteria, the number for that item does not get reset. Those trades will continue to wait to be used when the item does not meet the criteria. It appears somewhere along the line, the data being passed around between various modules, this number is being incorrectly used as the amount of trades since the last overall GE recalculation, not specifically of that item's last recalculation. So for now, ignore that graph on the GE website. It's unfortunately incorrect. Okay, so ignore trade values on the Grand Exchange. Got it. And diving into this a little bit more, this is an issue that primarily affects low-volume, expensive items. So like the rares that we were looking at. And in parsing out what Sokoto said, we can summarize that the issue is one where the trade volumes stack until the price of said item updates itself on the GE. And after that price updates, the values will be reset and we'll get a glimpse of what the proper trade volume is. And this process will then repeat itself. And we're in this category because expensive items just don't update their prices that frequently on the GE. Any questions about where we're at right now, where we're going on this from either of you? Because it's a bit of an obtuse issue.
No, I don't really have any issue. I don't look at those type of things.
Okay.
I think obviously it has an impact now, right, because it's not accurate. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to have a big impact on what we saw
long-term
predicted before. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be similar.
Yeah, and you know the general trends for the economy are going to stay the same. Specifically, the biggest sources of in money and the sources of out money for it. And he gave an example where the values were hypothetically 5, 20, 40, 56, and 10 on a Monday through Friday in terms of trade volumes. The actual values would be 5 or less, then 15, which is represented by 20 minus 5, 20, 40 minus 20, 16, and then 10. And he shows that how they compact with each other and how you can kind of derive the values by doing a little bit of subtraction along the way with that. And with this, we just want to remind everybody, take the discussion on grand exchange values and the amount of gold removed with a huge grain of salt. Because the GE does have the potential, as we see here, to act as one of the biggest gold sinks that RS can have, but we need to wait until the proper trade volume is there before making any kind of guess as to how much GP has actually been removed. Now, it's interesting because if you go to the Grand Exchange website and you'll look at today as a recording, Thursday, June 22nd, and you'll see that a lot of the prices for expensive items actually got big updates today to the point where they updated the price of all the classic rares. Right now, Blue Party Hat is showing at $94.8 billion. But if you go to down to that trade volume graph, yeah, for this for the 22nd, it's got a trade volume of zero. If we go to the Black Santa hat, which is, of course, something that's going to be a little wider traded, it's got a trade value of two for this. So you can see that after the price updated from 2.3 bill to 23.2 bill for the Black Santa hat, that the trade volume actually showed the correct amount, that there were two Black Santa hats traded today on the Grand Exchange. So you can start to see this in action about how whenever there's a price update, we get a glimpse at to what the correct value is for this. And, you know, we'll be watching this and we'll be monitoring whether or not the trade values return to their larger numbers over the weekend and into next week. And if they do go back to those bigger numbers, it's safe to say that the issue hasn't been fixed, but, you know, we'll also keep an eye out to see if Matsukoto says anything about whether or not these items were updated, or rather, this problem was updated here. So we just have to mention that. 11 Guildmaster Tony's Matic apparently traded yesterday, if this number is correct, after the price update. They also updated the price of the HSR from 2.1 to 3.37. So,
oof.
Yeah.
Mm.
Black Santa at 23.2 bill, eh? Interesting. Yeah. But so, yeah, just, you know, take those GE values with a grain of salt. And it's unfortunate that a large portion of the discussion on last week's podcast needs to be just kind of forgotten at this point until we know what's actually happening with these trade volumes. And unfortunately, we were outside of the window of being able to issue a notice on last week's show or do editing on that when we learned about it, because the show had already gone out. But that's why we're talking about that this week. Anything else on that before?
I was just going to say, I wasn't lucky enough to pop a balloon and get a Black Santa like someone else I know. Shane. Shane's got one of those lucky accounts, I think.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I haven't got any dice yet.
Not yet, but I bet by the end of it you'll get one.
All right, fair enough. Well, with that, let's move on to our achievements of the week. Parnassus, you want to start us off?
I do. First, we have Moon Dragon, who hit 120 farming on June 21st. Also on June 21st, WM Penguin with 120 dungeoneering. I bet you that was a bit of time spent in the hole. Boritzi has hit two on June 20th. He hit 99 summoning and 99 fire making. And quests are shite. With 120 fishing on June 19th.
Nicely done.
So then we have I Like Slayer, I Do Too, with 120 dungeoneering on the 18th. We have Iskatu with 120 archaeology on the 18th. We have Pony Picker with 120 fire making on the 18th. And 120 fletching. And 120 thieving, all on the 18th. They're busy. And then Skips with 120 fishing, also on the 18th.
Right on. Then on the 17th, we have Queen RuPaul with 99 fishing. Lord Earth, our very own Earth, with 99 fletching on the road to max. Then we have Moo Dragon X with 120 archaeology. Queen RuPaul again with 99 woodcutting, and RR Man ends at another community member on their way with 120 farming on the 15th.
Those poor sheep.
Yeah, those poor sheep. Poor sheep.
RR Man will understand that.
Yeah, yeah, the New Zealand reference. All right, so pick of the week, and you know, I got encouraged to do this pick of the week after discussing with Iron Raxor last week about how we need to do more of these obscure picks of the week, specifically tech picks of the week. And I got one of those this week, and that's the Web Design Museum. And for somebody who, you know, started making websites in the late 90s, like myself, in early 2000s, this is a step back in history, because you can go back in time here. And you can look at the designs of what, you know, some of the most common websites would have looked like throughout history. And, you know, they got pages for each company. They got pages by the year. They got an Apple page. You can see what Apple looked like in 2006. And then fast forward to 97, 98, 99, 2000, and see the gradual evolution of Apple.com as we get to where we are today. And the interesting part about this is that it's not just, you know, what did websites look like way back when, right? It's a time capsule of how the design of said websites worked. And, you know, this is something that most people probably don't think about, is that when you go to a website, the structure of that website is actually informed by a flow in terms of how do you get from point A to B to accomplish something. And that's one of the more convoluted things that isn't necessarily seen when just browsing the web. But that's one thing that the Web Design Museum does, is it showcases how these sorts of trends changed year over year. And there's a history of this in terms of, you know, hey, the first web server in the US in December of 91. BBEdit in 92, people who use a Mac would be familiar with that software, Mosaic, Internet Explorer, so on and so forth. And every major website, the history and timeline of when they first appear is chronicled here. And a lot of these technologies have come and gone. Like, do you guys remember Flash websites, like Flash design websites of the mid-2000s, where you'd go there and it would just be one page that would load up and you get like an interactive experience?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Sorry, I'm just flicking through some of these, like Netflix. I forgot Netflix started as a just DVD a DVD rental site. Yeah, it's just like, wow, this is a good little site to have a look at.
Yeah, and you know, Flash websites were notorious back in the day because you couldn't optimize them for search engines because everything that was presented was in a media container, in that it couldn't be indexed by a search engine. So often behind the scenes, you used to have a static HTML text-based page behind it that the search engines could read if you were really doing things to the proper level. And it also shows that shift from when we went with, you know, big, heavy drop shadows and gaudy beveled images to the more flat designs that we see today. So it chronicles all these sorts of things like that. And if you've been on the internet a long time, you'll definitely see some websites that you're familiar with. But if you are a part of the web design community, you built websites, you do that today, and you got your start way back when, you'll also see this and remember, these are the trends we used to use for this, in terms of, and you know, this is really going to date me, you make a website in Photoshop, or as it was back in the day, Macromedia Fireworks, and then you split each website up and it converts it to a table-based design. And that's something we wouldn't dream of doing today, but for the vast part of the early 2000s, that's how we made websites and made them look good before modern technologies made their way onto a scene. And there's just so many things about, like, how do you do a drop shadow in 2002 versus how you easily do a drop shadow today in 2023. And you can see all examples of this at the Web Design Museum, including everyone's favorite web browsers, including like Netscape and the old versions of Internet Explorer, dare I
say. The old search engines. I'm just going through those at the moment. I forgot half of these. Webcrawler and Search.com.
Lycos.
Yeah. I never used Lycos, but some of these ones. InfoSeek, AOL. Yep. I mean, God, I remember half of these on here.
You see someone else dating themselves now, too.
Yeah. Oh, this is amazing.
But you can find this all at webdesignmuseum.org. And they have a fun Twitter account, too, where they post the highlights of what was happening, you know, this day in web design, sort of thing like that. But webdesignmuseum.org. All right. Yeah, that's another one. What have we been up to? Tanis, let's start with you. One of our Encanto hunts didn't go as well as the other two did.
No. And I'm hunting and hunting and hunting. But we're finally, I got a piece during the show.
Okay, so you're up to what, two or three?
Three.
Okay, so one to go.
One to go. But it has been a long week of woodcutting trying to get this. Coming into the show, I'm like, is it a myth? Like, what's going
on? Did I do something wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we checked your setup and everything, and it was pretty much similar to ours, I think, minus the addition of the Perfect Plus. So
yeah.
So you've just been woodcutting this week.
I have been. All I have been doing, yes.
Okay, and on the hunt for those elusive Encanto pieces. Got it.
Yeah, well, I did a little bit of, I mean, I guess you can call it bossing, but I'm doing a little bit trying to get my own stuff for necromancy.
Right.
So did some corp and some more real.
Yeah. Okay. The two where you got to be. That makes sense. Okay. So hopefully you'll have the Encanto hatchet for next week then. You can get back to doing what you really want. I was worried about that at the start that, you know, maybe something had gone wrong, or maybe you didn't have the right setup or something. I don't know. Anything else you want to share?
No, I mean, that's really been about it. I've been enjoying the update. I'm loving the economy. It's great for a player like myself. Like it's finally a good time for me.
Yeah. And you know, I do worry about where the Elder Logs are going to land just because so many of them come into game with this now. And
yeah.
I think it's important that they reach a value where they can be used, right? Like, we don't want it to be horrendously expensive to train at the four to level 99, right?
Yeah, it will. This, I don't see, as great as what we've said, and as good as it is, I don't think it's going to have a lot of, like, staying power, right? Like, people aren't going to be doing it for money, but it definitely helps them as they're going through their 99 or 120 grinds.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It's a brand new update. Everyone's doing it, but give it a month or two, it'll settle down, and we'll see. I think we'll see in 6 to 8 weeks' time where everything is going to settle price-wise once people have done their upgrades and that they need, and it'll just be the ones who are skilling and enjoying it that are making everything and doing that stuff. So,
yeah. And
if they bring, I mean, as I said, I've got about 20. I think I put 20,000 of my Elder Logs up at 15K, and they haven't sold. So, you know, I think if they settle in around that sort of 8, 9, 10K mark, I think that'll be a good spot where they still hold a bit of value, but they're much more viable to use price wise.
Yeah, fair enough. How about you, Parnassus? What have you been up to this week?
I have basically, again, just been skilling. I completed my golden cape, so I had my 28 days of that porter buff. So I was doing a lot of mining, trying. So I'm going for 200 mil in all my skills at the moment. And then when this update come out, hit that and just been woodcutting. So I've actually made two Imkando axes now. Got the second one while I was just doing all the testing for those numbers. And yes. Basically, yeah, just a lot of AFK mining and woodcutting.
All right, fair enough. Shortly after the podcast last week, I went back to the beach and I got my last cape shard, the artisan cape shard, while doing construction there. So that was good. Finished that off, and then following from that, like you said, this week has just been a week of woodcutting up until a couple days back when I started testing the stuff at the fort for construction XP. I think for me, it took about 8 hours of skilling with scrimshaws to get the four Imkando pieces. Well, three plus the one that Oak gives you, right?
Yeah. 9 hours for my first one, okay. But the second one coming in basically, I think, 5 hours.
Okay.
Second one in, so yeah.
Right, you want the second one for just the tool belt, right?
Oh, no, that was actually just come in for while I was testing, so yeah, now I'm going to just chuck it on the tool belt since I got it.
Okay, fair. And, you know, like we were saying earlier, this was an interesting thing to test XP-wise at the fort for XP, because it's not something where you can just, you know, run it for 10 minutes, pop open Rune Metrics and call it a day and see what it reports. No. Because every time you complete the building, you get a huge chunk of XP, and that throws up the XP per hour. So you have to, in effect, do a test to the point where you make sure that you've got enough building completions rolled into it to see where things are going to land. So some of these tests, you know, you normally do the 10, 15, or 20-minute test and then extrapolate from there. But most of the tests that I did this week were actually 30-minute or an hour-long tests, believe it or not, for this. So
mine were all 15 minutes. Yeah. So yeah.
And I mean, you can do that because it's going to be consistent over time with that. You're not getting huge XP drops.
Hmm.
So always interesting to look at that. So I hope at the end of the day, this has been an interesting discussion and that, you know, we all feel like we've come to a good place on this with Woodcutter's Grove. In that, you know, it's a skilling update that I think everybody wanted for woodcutting. It's just, like we said, only missing a few things. Hopefully it scratched that itch. And we said, interestingly enough, and I have to go back into the history for this just before we wrap up the show here. In 2005, on June 12th, we published the first episode of this podcast, 18 years ago. Believe it or not. And you know what the first episode we discussed was back then?
It was...
No, that would have been 2006. We discussed the seeds and farming equipment because those were put into game a month before farming came out. So we started this show.
18 years old. Wow.
We started this show discussing seeds and farming. And here we are again discussing nests 18 years later. I think that's just interesting how it landed that way, and we're just going to let the listeners think what they want about that, whether or not it was meant to be like that. But as we say for the Patreon supporters, big thank you to everybody. But that also goes out to everybody who has been involved in the show over all the years. Big thank you to everybody.
The nests have just gone to 18. Nests Plus. So if it's in Australia, they're now legal. 18 plus.
Oh God.
Nest Plus.
Why? I was wondering why they call it Nest Plus.
Yeah, well, there you go. They're 18 plus. They're legal age now. I think that's legal age in the UK too. So there you go.
And on that note, that's it for this episode of Update, everybody. If you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, best way to do that is to subscribe on your favorite podcast listener. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Pocket Casts, Spotify, and more. Just visit update.show/subscribe and, you know, leave us a like, leave us a comment on your favorite podcast listener, because there's lots of podcasts out there, specifically old ones that don't update that often. So it helps the show if you do that, just like it helps the show on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. There we post the video version of the shows and the nibbles. As we said, like and subscribe there too. It helps out on all platforms, really. But we'll be back next week to discuss whatever updates coming down the pipe. And it looks like we're going to be getting a reveal date about when Necromancy is arriving next week. The cinematic release trailer is coming on Tuesday. Believe it or not. So we'll be watching that. Thank you to the both of you for being here. And
thank you for the invite.
We'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Happy Skyping, all.